is to blame for our broken politics? The comfortable answer to this question starts with ordinary citizens with good intentions. We vote, sometimes, and occasionally sign a petition or attend a rally. But we mainly engage by consuming politics as if it's a sport or a hobby. This according to our next guest, who says instead we should be spending the same number of hours building political organizations, implementing a long-term vision for a city or town, and getting to know our neighbors, whose votes will be needed for solving the really hard problems. In his new book, Politics is for Power, Tufts political science professor Eitan Hersh shows us a way toward more effective political participation. Again, the name of the book is Politics is for Power, and we welcome Eitan Hersh to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you to this particular project of looking at the power of all this?
You know, when you take a step back from the narrow kind of statistical questions that I and most political scientists usually focus on, and you try to look at the big picture, you look at how Americans are behaving in politics, what are they doing, how are they spending their time, you kind of have this realization that I had, which is that most of what folks are doing, news consumption, the way that they're engaging in activism online, it amounts to very little. It looks a lot more like they're doing something close to sports fandom, like a hobby, than they are engaging in politics, which is about, you know, working with others with goals and strategies to get the government to do something you want it to do.
So let us begin there, because it's in the subtitle and it's something you just brought up. How do you define political hobbyism? What is that?
So political hobbyism is when you are engaging in political topic for your own kind of intellectual or emotional needs and desires rather than to get government to do something that you want to do. So it's news consumption, it's arguing online, it's shallow forms of engagement we call slacktivism, like signing a petition, throwing a dollar at a candidate. It's all of that. It's the dinner table agonizing. It's thinking about politics. It's all the ways that we do politics, but not in the way that moves politics in our direction.
So how do we then change that and make that into power of using that for political power?
So I think it takes, first of all, to understand what we're doing when we're doing politics. You know, I think people need to have a realization that if they're spending an hour or two a day in news consumption or on social media, they aren't doing politics. It's important to understand why we do it that way. And then to have this paradigm shift that we actually have a role to play. You know, I think for a lot of people, politics feels important, but the important stuff is very far away. It's in Washington. And for that important stuff, any individual has, you know, basically no role to play in it. They can't really influence, you know, the Supreme Court, the impeachment trial, or any of that. The paradigm shift is to think about politics the way that real political organizers are thinking about it, which is like this. I, as an individual citizen, am entitled to one vote, one voice. How many more can I get? And so, you know, in this book, I follow around these organizers who influence, control 1,000 people's votes. How did they do that? What is that like? What use is that? What can they do with that power? And I think that shift is both fascinating to see and to understand, and also something that I think a lot more people would aspire to if they saw it in action.
To that point, the book tells the stories of several normal people who turned into activists and how they became involved in their communities, how they approach change on a local level. What brought you to these particular individuals?
You know, there's an origin story for each of them. I was really looking for people who could be hobbyists, you know, people who didn't care about politics, but maybe were doing it more from the couch and trying to understand what sparked them to change and then how they did it. So, you know, there's a story of this elderly man who didn't do any political activity really until his retirement. He's a refugee from the former USSR, and an immigration issue in the 90s that affected a lot of immigrants related to the welfare reform bill in the 90s got him interested in political activity, and he soon leveraged his whole community by basically doing favors for people, being nice, being a leader. He soon got this whole old age home, low-income housing, to be voting at two or three times the voting rates of all the precincts around it. all voting for candidates together. And this brought them real results on issues they cared about related to immigration, but also related to, you know, mobility issues for the elderly and so forth. And, you know, this was just a regular guy who came to this country as a retiree, and he figured this out. And you know, it's really a remarkable story.
I was struck recently when we had a weekend, one particular weekend in the month of February, where you have on a Friday, it becomes clear that witnesses will not be called to a trial for the president of the United States, and those witnesses will not be called, and ultimately the president will be acquitted. Then on Sunday, there is the Super Bowl, and Kansas City wins for the first time in 50 years. The city goes nuts and people take to the streets. You think to yourself, oh, well, if anything, this would be, however you feel about the subject, you would think that something like that would bring people, meaning the not calling of witnesses, would bring people out, would bring people to the streets. Are we becoming, do you see an increase in political hobbyism where more people are yelling about it on Twitter as opposed to going out and actually doing something?
So for sure, we're right now at a record high moment historically with people saying they're interested in politics, that they care about the election, that the stakes are high, but we're historically below the average in terms of people, you know, volunteering for organizations or candidates. And, you know, related to what you said, it's really tied to people really react to kind of whether the wind is at their back or not. You know, right after Trump got elected, you have all this energy on the left. Right after Obama was elected in 2008, you remember, the Tea Party groups formed. And then what happens is, you know, your celebrity candidate's not there anymore, or maybe the wind is against you, the political winds are against you. And if you're not tied to a local community organization, a political party group, a church, then every time something goes wrong, you know, the witnesses aren't called, you feel bummed out and you don't want to get out there because your relationship to the political world is about these national stories and the drama. It's not about your commitment and relationships to other people who are near you.
So what is it, and we have seen it over the past 4 years, where there have been events, especially around immigration, where people have gone to the airports, people have gone out at various moments and have taken to the streets. And I'm not saying that always is it what has to be done, but it is a very grand gesture. So what is it that's going right in those moments?
So, you know, the way I think about protests and things like that, and I learned a lot about this from the people I interviewed in the book, to be honest with you. I didn't really have a clear image of it before. But you got to think about protests that sometimes they're just cathartic and sometimes they're strategic. When they're cathartic, the protest itself, the march, that's the whole goal. It's to vent steam, get something off your chest. Maybe you'll go to D.C. for the Women's March, or you'll go, you know, for a national, international climate day rally. And that's it. That's the whole goal. And that's not so good. But other marches and rallies and protests can be strategic. They either, you know, stop some activity that the government's doing, or they raise some awareness. And they're a first step, you know. So it's like this, you know, the Black Lives Matter protest, an example, had really clear message about police issues. And the thing is that for that movement to gain steam, it requires a lot of people in local communities to engage in questions about policing. And so raising attention is the first step for an issue like that or whatever issue you care about. But that's just the beginning. And so it's a mistake if we think about these protests and marches as the end rather than the beginning.
The other thing that you talk about in the book, which is really important, is the fact that the people that you are talking about, these normal people turned activists, is they're involved in their communities. They are working on a local level. They are advocating for something, for a candidate or an interaction, and they're looking for that. And so that's important to note. It starts in the communities.
Right. It starts where you can have an experience with other people where you're getting feedback. Like, you know that you need these people around you to come along with you in a group to take some action together. And so you build that rapport. You know, when I think about that elderly man who gained all the respect of his neighbors, those neighbors didn't vote or not vote based on who the presidential candidates were or what the news story of the day was. It was all about their relationship to this organizer. and they voted because they respected him and he had their trust. That's how grassroots organizations work. It's not about what's happening at the big scale. Not everyone needs to be informed about all of the national news stories and gossip of the day. They need to have person-to-person relationships where people trust each other and rely on each other and will depend on each other for votes or showing up to a meeting or something like that.
You have a chapter in the book called Bringing Out the Worst in Us, and you look at this question of does shallow political hobbyism bring out the worst in us? We meet a man by the name of Dave in this chapter. Tell us about Dave and ultimately how we can bring out the worst and why that is so important not to do that.
Right. So Dave is famous in the world of organizing for inventing this idea called deep canvassing, which is a method of engaging in canvassing, like door knocking, talking about politics, but not in like a shallow way with a 5-minute script that's awful, but with these really kind of deep conversations with strangers who may oppose your view on something that's focused on listening and empathy and building rapport so that someone who's different than you might understand where you're coming from. And if they really hadn't maybe thought about the issue that you're advocating for so much, maybe they'll come around to your view. But, you know, in that chapter, what I talk about is that how different that is from how we do politics online. So when we do politics online, we're practicing skills like outrage and provocation. We're doing that, and we know there's a lot of data on this. Websites like Facebook tell Facebook, you know, what's getting the most shares, what's getting the most likes, what's getting the most retweets, and it's all the most provocative, outrageous stuff. And so that's the kind of skill set, being provocative, that is favored online. But you look at people like Dave or anyone who's really talking every day to people who disagree with them and trying to build power, they're cultivating a completely different skill set focused on listening, empathy. And in some ways, it's so obvious. Any of us know that in a meeting or any time we have to try to convince someone of something, you can't do it by yelling, obviously. You have to be nice and meet people where they are. And so that's kind of what political organizing is like. It's being nice and empathetic. And it's just so different than how we experience politics online.
Eitan Hersh is the author of the new book, Politics is for Power. In that chapter, when you're talking about Dave, you ended by asking the question, if we do politics the way Dave wants, will it make us more empathetic, which will in turn help us convince more people to act in politics the way that we want them to? You don't really have an answer for that question. You certainly go into much more detail later in the book, but it's a good question to ask, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, in the book, I actually go talk about at the end a little bit my own experience with this, because I, you know, have all the same excuses that the rest of the hobbyists have. You know, I'm too busy. I don't know if I have the right personality type to be a political organizer. That doesn't sit well with me. But, you know, when I started to get engaged myself, I learned that Dave's right, you know, that this makes you better. It brings out the best in you if you are trying to get people to work together on solving a political or community problem. You got to be nice and empathetic and patient and behave in the ways that a lot of us always wish we behave but don't always live up to.
And it's the empathy that I find so interesting. It's the empathy of seeing the other point, understanding it, and trying to address it in some way.
Yeah, you can only treat your opponent as this horrible villain if you don't need anything from them. You know, so politics as a hobbyist is extreme and, you know, avoids compromise because it costs you nothing. You're not trying to do anything. But in person, we all know that a lot of these issues that people care a lot about, whether it's questions about the environment, racial equality, economic development, these issues are gray, and people who disagree with us are not jerks for the most part. They're people who have different set of ideas or incentives or whatever, and so it takes understanding those issues to try to move politics, you know, towards what you want it to be.
You end the book by saying that implicit in the book is a hierarchy. And it's safe to say that most of us are at the bottom of that hierarchy, correct?
Well, I think most of us who are spending an hour or two a day worrying and thinking about politics, we're in the middle of the hierarchy. There's all these people who are doing, you know, not they don't have a time or interest in paying attention to politics. They're the people that many of us could move. People who are the target audience for this book are people who know politics is important. They know it's a civic duty. They're spending time thinking about it, but they're channeling all their energy not towards recruiting those other people, but just to kind of serving their own intellectual and emotional needs.
So when it comes down to it, what should our to-do list look like?
So I think our to-do list starts by working with others, maybe a friend or two, and trying to start having an impact. You know, the stories in this book are mostly about long-term impact over a few years, maybe sometimes in some cases a decade, and trying to build power for what you care about. You know, I think about in my own life sending friends, maybe 100 friends in my neighborhood, a list of candidates that I vote for. And they don't know all the details of who to vote for in a local election, but they trust me and they respect my opinion. And, you know, I get all these notes from people saying, oh yeah, I took your slate into the polling place. You know, many people can do that. A lot of people can inform themselves, take action, and get folks to come on board with them either in voting or in advocacy at a local level.
Eitan Hirsch is an associate professor in the Department of Political Science and at the Tisch College of Civic Life at Tufts University. The name of the new book is Politics is for Power, How to Move Beyond Political Hobbyism, Take Action, and Make Real Change. The book is published by Scribner. Eitan Hirsch, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
I appreciate the conversation. Again, the name of the book is Politics is for Power. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.